in the air, we boys in the land, and we boys in the water we drink. And we're the only known creatures in the whole universe with the ability to think. But we keep on thinking, having us alive from how much we buy and sell. And more and more of paradise is lost, and only time will tell what will become of Mother Nature. In the coming years, when we will have about 10 million neighbors on the sphere, will our children's children wake up to the American dream? Or will it have become a nightmare beyond imagining?
Welcome back to Eco Talk, and every time I hear that theme song, I think that is so relevant to this particular segment and this particular show, but I guess that's why we chose that theme song from our friend Bob Wickline. We're going to be chatting with Joel McEwen now. He is the director of a movie that is not yet out. It's being made, but it just fit in so nicely with our chat with John DeGraff on consumption and time issues that we Americans are facing, and there is an environmental aspect to all this, of course. And Joel is working on a movie called In Pursuit of Happiness, and they're about halfway through production, and he's taking time out to tell us more about this and perhaps what we might do in the listening audience to help get this out wider and sooner. Thanks for joining us, Joel.
Oh, no problem at all. Thanks for having me.
So we like to start at the beginning, and we have enough time in this segment to do that. So kind of summarize how you got into the business of making a movie that addresses some really core issues.
Well, honestly, I never thought I would really be the one to make this type of film. I originally grew up in Ohio and kind of grew up not really, you know, definitely concerned to some extent about the environment, but it definitely not being the forefront of my concerns and not really thinking that often when I would buy something or maybe do something, what possibly the repercussion of that action would be. And so I actually started a company out here, a construction company, and was really working, and it kind of ties into what definitely John DeGraff was talking about with time poverty. I was just caught up in working and working and definitely making, you know, a good amount of money, but I was so caught up in working and kind of chasing, to me, this American dream in a way that I didn't really stop to really think about what I was doing or what I was really, you know, accomplishing. I definitely had a lot of money, but it seemed more and more that it was kind of a fleeting thing to some extent, because the more I worked, the less time I had. And so at one point after working basically every single day for a whole year, 12-hour days except for Christmas, I kind of just said, you know, I'm going to step back from this race. And at the same time, within about a year or so, the Iraq invasion broke out. So I felt that I wanted to kind of, you know, investigate and learn more about that and maybe what part I had in that. So through the process of me scaling back my company and also kind of investigating, you know, oil and really the realities of that, I decided to kind of take things into my own hands to some extent, feeling that for many years I really wasn't conscious of this. So I felt that felt a little empowered and felt that, wow, I feel I can make a difference. So I decided to sell, I had at that time actually three trucks and a BMW, and I decided to sell all of them. And
that was enough to make the film.
Well, yeah, basically, that was enough to make the film, exactly. And I bought an EV, electric vehicle.
Well, that and the gas it would take to fuel all those would be enough.
Exactly. So I bought an EV, and even in finding the EV and finding how actually accessible that whole world was, which was totally unknown to me. I mean, you turn on, you know, in the news, you turn on different radio stations besides yours, honestly, besides your radio show, and you won't really hear about these things. So
that's why we're doing it.
Exactly. So I was marveled. I was like, well, gosh, you know, within seconds, I found this whole other world. So I traded that stuff in for basically an electric vehicle and a bunch of camera equipment, and I decided to make this movie.
I love it. So what you're saving in gas money is funding a documentary that will change the way we live.
Yes, yes. There's a certain irony there, definitely.
Well, you know, it's interesting that, you know, they say things happen, you know, all at the same time, sort of critical mass of thinking. There's been several movies that have a message, obviously, beginning most notably with Fahrenheit 9/11, The Corporation with a strong environmental theme, Super Size Me, all about consumption, all kinds of consumption, What the Bleep Do We Know about consciousness raising, and now In Pursuit of Happiness. So do you kind of take pieces of all that and weave together in documentary style with a sense of humor, sort of what's wrong with this picture?
Well, I think we definitely do that. I've been asked, you know, what is the film similar to? And if I did have to compare it to other films, I would say it definitely looks at, I think, kind of the profound nature that Bowling for Columbine, how that takes a look at, you know, human society and what we're possibly becoming with guns and with aggression and things like that. I think In Pursuit takes overconsumption and takes, you know, problems with the environment and looks at those as repercussions, really, as society's really general loss of sense of purpose. And so we definitely, you know, take elements of Bowling for Columbine. We also combined kind of the behind-the-scene nature of Super Size Me, where you're watching one guy kind of make this film, and you're kind of seeing him go through the process of that. So we definitely show that. And we also take from What the Bleep Do We Know, where that's a film that combines, you know, narrative with documentary. So you're kind of watching a regular kind of everyday film that people really enjoy and that's very accessible to the mainstream. But at the same time, that's kind of juxtaposed to these very educational, very important documentary interviews. So we kind of try to really combine not just the regular narrative film with documentary, but we also throw in some animation and comedy and drama and try to really mix the genres up to really make it accessible. And although you're definitely hearing a lot of information I think is very valuable and very important, we try to make it in a way that it's not preaching to the choir, in a way that it's not alienating. So
make it entertaining.
Yes, exactly, because pointing the finger, I don't think that really has gotten us really anywhere. I think it's more about realizing how, first of all, realizing the environment that most people grow up in. I mean, the number one free time activity is watching TV. So the more we really look at these real facts, I think it's very logical, very mathematical, honestly, why the world is the way it is.
Interesting. And in fact, you are, I think, using one of the producers from What the Bleep Do We Know to work on your project?
Yeah, well, actually, the guy that was behind kind of the marketing and really getting What the Bleep out into the theaters was John Ratz. And so he's dealing with all our marketing and kind of been using a similar setup to basically market this film and to get it out into the theaters also.
You know, what you talk about is what we're really trying to do here on EcoTalk. We're certainly, you know, taking on very serious issues, perhaps the most serious, you know, the future of mankind on the planet. but we don't take ourselves too seriously. I think that's the key.
Well, no, and I think that is very important, because I think the biggest thing with any of these type of messages is, of course, realizing the validity and the passion within the message. Obviously, that's going to get you there in the first place. But beyond that is realizing the system you have that's already existing that we have to work within to get the message out to the people that really need to hear it. There's obviously a lot of people, you know, at this point, definitely, you know, 50 million plus that are very into hearing these type of alternative messages. I think it's a matter of just getting to beyond the 50 million, getting it to the 100 million, you know, or more, where hopefully there will be this kind of, you know, collective kind of conscious change, as you were, you know, speaking about a little bit before.
Tipping point.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of distribution are you hoping for, and what's your timeline?
Well, right now where we're at is we're actually planning a U.S. tour where we'll be wrapping up some other interviews of different selected interviews, but really the real reason we're going on the tour is to just go from the West Coast to the East Coast and back again and just interview everyday Americans. To me, that's really going to be the heart of the documentary. We can have many, many experts telling you that this is the way that it should be or this is the way it is or whatever, but I think really people are going to find the solutions within themselves and really aren't going to hear them or be told what they definitively are. So to me, the more everyday people that we can interview throughout America about what this great country is right now and what it really can be and what really we all have in common as far as really, I mean, I don't know anyone that likes to, you know, I don't know anyone that doesn't like breathing the air, drinking the water, and enjoying the sun once in a while.
Even conservatives and Republicans.
Well, exactly. So by that definition, you know, you're an environmentalist, whether you believe it or like it or not.
Yeah, try going one day without it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think the more we can really try to bring people together through our you know, things that will benefit us commonly, I think that's the biggest key. So throughout that, we're going to, you know, go throughout America and raise the awareness of the film, but also interview everyday people about these types of issues, about being an environmentalist in Georgia or in other states, so things like that.
Well, I saw the 10-minute demo on your website last night, and you do have some leading thinkers on, like John DeGraff, Vicki Robbins, as well as, like you said, everyday folks.
Yes, yes. I mean, we definitely have, you know, some of the people involved are Howard Zinn, obviously author of People's History of the United States, actor, activist Danny Glover, and Ed Begley Jr., also another actor very famous for being an environmentalist.
I think more so than for being an actor at this point.
I think so at this point. And then, you know, many other people, John DeGraff, definitely, obviously, one of them. But we do have some everyday people in there, and we're trying to get, you know, really, really more of them, because I think that, once again, is going to be really the heart of the film to show the struggle that we're all really going through. Because the thing I think that I really relate to with what John is talking about with time poverty is that I really do believe everyone is doing the best they can. But when you really don't have time to even step back to
enjoy it,
you know, to enjoy it, or you're rushing off to pick up your kids, or you're, you know, you're rushing off to get to work, how can you be that concerned with, you know, the environment, for instance, or concerned with, you know, possibly a war or what's happening in other countries? It's really hard to focus on those issues if you don't have time to barely breathe, really. So
I can relate.
Yes, no, and most people can. And I could relate, and even doing this production, of course, get caught up. But I think it's a matter of just stepping back and breathing and really realizing, you know, are we happy doing this, and what are we doing it for, and what are we becoming in the process?
No, but I think the real challenge is, okay, you know, the train's going too fast. How can I stop it? How can I get off? Can it be stopped?
Right. Well, no, I think that's very true. I mean, you look around, you know, at the pace of society. For instance, you know, a few years ago, a soundbite actually used to be something that was 2 minutes or less. The average soundbite now is anywhere from 2 seconds to 10 seconds.
And so is the memory of it.
Very touche, very true. Well, our society, you know, everything is becoming quicker and faster. And not that there's necessarily anything wrong with that, but if we start really jeopardizing our own environment, our own health, our own sanity, really, at that point, I think we need to step back and realize that maybe this fast pace is detrimental.
Okay, we're going to step back for at least a couple of minutes here, and then we'll continue our conversation with Joel McEwen, the director of the film In Progress, In Pursuit of Happiness. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Eco Talk on Air America Radio.
So much, how much do we really need? And how long can a dream survive that seems to thrive on greed? Political pollution is so thick and dark and dense, it contaminates and poisons common good and common sense. Let's take our hands.
Welcome back to Eco Talk. We are in conversation with Joel McEwen, the director of a movie I think you're going to be hearing a lot about, and hopefully we'll see when it comes out and hits the theaters. In Pursuit of Happiness, seems like it's going to resonate with a lot of Americans. Joel, as you go about filming and fundraising, are you finding, in fact, people get kind of excited about what you're doing?
Yes, actually, I've been quite surprised throughout the process. We've pretty much raised all the funds for the film through myself, selling a bunch of my stuff, and also through other environmentally minded people, which is pretty much how we're, you know, going to stick with things. And one of the big kind of points of the film, I think, what gives it validity, I guess, would be also how we're kind of walking the walk with the film. We don't want it to be really funded by a huge Hollywood studio, not that they would necessarily fund this type of film, but we're really trying to get it through grassroots type of organization and word of mouth. And through doing that process, it's been amazing how people not necessarily in California or just on the East Coast or in kind of the bigger cities, but people in Georgia and Indiana, people in other parts of the world, really, which I found very interesting, really want to see this film. And so I think, you know, we talked about before, you know, different common themes I think we have are, you know, one definitely is time, and like John DeGraff referred to it as time poverty. I think, you know, we try to really look at these general issues, these general problems that, you know, that are nonpartisan, that anyone can really have. And through that, then we branch off and look at other more detailed examples. But I have been very amazed at the response, you know, throughout America and in places that I thought maybe they wouldn't be as open to the film. It seems that they are very open to it. And I think it does have that appeal for people that, whether they have money, whether they don't, whether, you know, they're working a lot, whether they're not working a lot even, I think it's really a matter of looking at the world and kind of the current path that general society, you know, kind of is taking. The catchphrase of the film is even, you know, one man's search for sanity in a world that seems to have lost its mind. So it obviously tells a little bit about what we're doing and also kind of the humor therein.
Do you have a, you know, sort of action plan at the end of it? Like, if this resonates, here's what you can do to stop the insanity.
Yes,
in your life.
It's kind of been amazing to see the success of, you know, not only the success, but, you know, also the marketing and the seminars and all the things that are happening right now for the film What the Bleep Do We Know. So in looking at that, at first I was almost kind of thought of humorous. I was like, wow, I can't believe that this film's all, it's taken off this much. But the more I was thinking about that, I was like, well, this is a great example of how we could, you know, follow a similar example and really spread the word of In Pursuit of Happiness. But with the film, I definitely do need to have a little disclaimer by saying, you know, we do not have the definitive answer. We do not have, you know, the answer to pursuing happiness. That's why it's entitled In Pursuit of Happiness. If anything, I think we more try to show examples of how, you know, we, in general, as a society, are conditioned by exterior elements, whether it be, you know, advertising or television, but also how we, in different ways, kind of trick ourselves. And so I think through that, the change, hopefully, within people will really happen in the theaters, and I think they will hopefully want to find their own answers. We definitely try to allude to them, but at the same time, we don't try to say that, you know, this is the answer for everyone, because everyone's pursuit of happiness, of course, is different.
Maybe the key to happiness is to stop pursuing so much. We're, you know, not just human beings, but more human doers or doings.
Yes, and when I think it's also really a matter of, you know, reassessing, you know, stepping back and looking at what we want to spend our time doing. You know, the more you start adding up things, for instance, then the average American, by the time they reach 70, will watch 7 to 10 years of television. The more so you knowing some of these things, the more it's, I think, a lot easier to, you know, assess and reassess, you know, what do I want my life to be at the end of the day or at the end of my life? You know, mm-hmm. What do I want to give my time to? And so throughout the film, we do, you know, give a bunch of those facts, I think, which will hopefully alert people to, you know, maybe reassess things. But we don't try to say, you know, go down this road or go down that road. If anything, we show kind of my own pursuit. And if someone happens to, you know, for instance, you're not like me saying this, but even if someone drives a Hummer to the theater and watches it, and they can at least come in, watch the film, and hopefully they leave with some messages. But at least, you know, we got them in the theater and are offering these messages without kind of alienating them in the process, if that makes sense.
Hey, they're driving a Hummer and they're living in places like the Bay Area where gas is about $3 a gallon. Not going to be able to afford your movie.
Well, yes, I know.
Where, do you hope to get, you know, sort of major distribution, you know, What the Bleep Really Happened, word of mouth? And I noticed it was playing at, you know, mainstream theater in Marin County, my neighborhood, and then it went away as if it, like, had a one-week engagement, like nobody thought it was going to catch on. And then word got out, there was a buzz, and then it came back for, like, 3 weeks.
Yes, well,
like back by due to popular demand.
Well, yeah, the marketing of What the Bleep was very interesting, you know, obviously John Ratz was behind that, and I know the directors of the film also were really, you know, pursuing that in marketing as much as they could through word of mouth. So I think we're definitely going to do that. Beyond that, we do have some celebrity involvement, which, of course, you know, does obviously help for distribution and press. So to me, the film kind of falls between the marketing that happened with What the Bleep and also with Super Size Me. I think we have certain elements as far as getting into people's mind and how the mind works that What the Bleep had, but at the same time, I think we have the everyday story of my own kind of transformation that Super Size Me, you know, pretty much had. So I think Super Size Me was in, you know, very big theaters, and What the Bleep was in more of the art theaters and in some big theaters. So I think we're being hopeful and trying to fall really in between the two, and people in the industry seem to think that it actually could fall in between the two, too, so that's always a good sign.
And what's your website, Joel?
Oh, thank you. My website, it's www.inpursuitofhappiness.us. And online, you can actually see a lot of information about the project, who's involved, celebrities, activists, and animated characters. And also, you can see a teaser and a 10-minute demo. And we are trying to raise support, so if anyone can help or donate or anything like that, they can do that online. And also contact us online if they have any comments or suggestions.
Okay, this will be coming when to a theater near us?
Well, we're hoping to wrap it up in the next 2 to 3 months. And we've already begun editing, you know, the footage that we have already. So we're hoping to get it in the theaters by the end of this year, beginning of next year. That's our goal.
Will this be a good Christmas release, you think?
Well, that's the thing. That is something that we are actually still discussing is, you know, if we get it in, you know, before Christmas, we'd have to get in there probably a good amount before Christmas.
Otherwise, anti-Christmas film.
Well, it's really not about that. I mean, people have tried to, you know, mention that about, no, it's about not shopping.
Oops,
it's not.
We're out of time, Joel. Thanks.
Okay.
See you all next time. Have a great green week.